the ninth in our series of complete performances of the operas of Gilbert and Sullivan. Today's opera is Rudigore, or The Witch's Curse.
Thank you.
Today, we have invited you to join us in Cornwall at the end of the Napoleonic Wars. We are in the tiny fishing village of Red Erin, and as we stand here, looking down the steep slope towards the little harbour with its fishing boats lying motionless in the sun, the only movement to be seen is that of the occasional swan gliding across the placid water. It is difficult to imagine that this place could be the scene of any supernatural occurrence. But just now the village sleeps peacefully, as it were exhausted by the heat. But wait a moment. I think the peace is about to be disturbed, for over there I can see a group of young girls who seem to be dressed as bridesmaids. They are making for that little whitewashed cottage with the thatched roof and well-kept garden. Old Dame Hannah lives there with the lovely orphan Rose Maybud. Let's go a little closer.
Gentle maidens, you sing well, but vainly, for Rose is still heart-free, and looks but coldly upon her many suitors.
It's very disappointing, Dame Hannah. Every young man in the village is in love with her, but they are appalled by her beauty and modesty and won't declare themselves. So until she makes her own choice, there's no chance for anybody else.
This is perhaps the only village in the world that possesses an endowed corps of professional bridesmaids, who are bound to be on duty every day from 10 to 4. And it is at least 6 months since our services were required. The pious charity by which we exist is practically wasted. existed.
We shall be disendowed. That will be the end of it. Dame Hannah, you're a nice old person. You could marry if you liked. There's old Adam, Robin's faithful servant. He loves you with all the frenzy of a boy of 14.
Nay, that may never be, for I am pledged.
To whom?
To an eternal maidenhood.
Oh.
Many years ago, I was betrothed to a godlike youth who wooed me under an assumed name. But on the very day upon which our wedding was to have been celebrated, I discovered that he was no other than Sir Roderick Murgatroyd, one of the bad baronets of Ruddigore, and the uncle of the man who now bears that title. As a son of that accursed race, he was no husband for an honest girl. So, madly as I loved him, I left him then and there. He died but 10 years since, but I never saw him again.
But why should you not marry a bad baronet of Ruddigore?
All baronets are bad, but was he worse than other baronets?
My child, he was a curse.
But who cursed him? Not you, I trust.
The curse is on all his line, and has been ever since the time of Sir Rupert, the first baronet. Listen, and you shall hear the legend.
His leisure and his riches he ruthlessly employed in persecuting witches. With fear he'd make them quake, he'd duck them in his lake, he'd break their bones with sticks and stones and burn them at the stake. Once on the village green a palsied hag he roasted, and what took place I weak shook his composure boasted. For as the thought of him seized on each withered limb, a writhing dame lit fire and flame, yet for this despite his best endeavor, shall prove one crime over, once any day forever. This gloom he can't defy, however he may try. Or should he stay his hand, that day in torture he shall each heir who held the title had every day to do some crime of import vital. Until with guilt or pride, I'll sin no more. He cried. And on the day he said,
dear Rose, on some errand of charity, as is thy wont.
A few gifts, dear aunt, for deserving villagers. Lo, here is some peppermint rock for old Gaffer Gadderby, a set of false teeth for pretty little Ruth Rowbottom, and a pound of snuff for the poor orphan girl on the hill.
Ah, Rose, Pity that so much goodness should not help to make some gallant youth happy for life. Rose, why dost thou harden that little heart of thine? Is there none hereaway whom thou couldst love?
And if there were such an one, verily, it would ill become me to tell him so.
Nay, dear one, where true love is, there is little need of prim formality.
Hush, dear aunt, for thy words pain me sorely. Hung in a plated dish cover to the knocker of the workhouse door, with naught that I could call mine own, save a change of baby linen and a book of etiquette. Little wonder if I have always regarded that work as a voice from a parent's tomb. This hallowed volume, composed, if I may believe the title page, by no less an authority than the wife of a Lord Mayor, has been through life my guide and monitor. By its solemn precepts, I have learned to test the moral worth of all who approach me. The man who bites his bread, or eats peas with a knife, I look upon as a lost creature. And he who has not acquired the proper way of entering and leaving a room is the object of my pitying horror. There are those in this village who bite their nails, dear aunt, and nearly all are wont to use their pocket combs in public places. In truth, I could pursue this painful theme much further, but behold, I have said enough.
But is there not one among them who is faultless in thine eyes? For example, young Robin. He combines the manners of a marquis with the morals of a Methodist. Couldst thou not love him?
And even if I could, how should I confess it unto him? For lo, he is shy, and saith naught.
Oh.
spoken to.
Poor aunt. Little did the good soul think when she breathed the hallowed name of Robin that he would do even as well as another. But he resembleth all the youths in this village in that he is unduly bashful in my presence. And lo, it is hard to bring him to the point. But soft, he is here.
Mistress Rose.
Master Robin.
I wish to say that it is fine.
It is passing fine.
But we do want rain.
I sorely. Is that all?
That is all.
Good day, Master Robin.
Good day, Mistress Rose.
I beg pardon. You were about to say?
I would fain consult you.
Truly?
It is about a friend.
In truth, I have a friend myself.
Indeed. I mean, of course.
And I would fain consult you.
About him?
About her.
Let us consult one another.
Loves a little maid, hey, but his face is a sight for to see. Silent is he, for he's modest and afraid, hey, but he's timid as you can be.
I know a maid who loves again a truth, hey, but she sickens as the days go by. She cannot tell him all the sad, sad truth.
He should pan his honest flame, hey, but he's bashful as a youth can be.
If I were the youth, I should speak to her today, hey, but she sickens as the days go by.
If I were the maid, I would meet the lad halfway, for I really do believe that timid
what she ought to.
Poor child. I sometimes think that if she wasn't quite so particular, I might venture... But no. No, even then I should be unworthy of her.
My kind master is sad.
Ah, Adam.
Dear Sir Riven Murgatroyd,
hush, I... as you love me, breathe not that hated name. 20 years ago, in horror at the prospect of inheriting that hideous title, and with it the ban that compels all who succeed to the baronetcy to commit at least one deadly crime per day for life, I fled my home and concealed myself in this innocent village under the name of Robin Oakapple. My younger brother, Despard, believing me to be dead, succeeded to the title and its attendant curse. For 20 years I have been dead and buried. Don't dig me up now.
Dear master, it shall be as you wish, for have I not sworn to obey you forever in all things? Yet, as we're here alone, let me call you by your own right title once more.
Oh, very well.
Sir Riven Murgatroyd, Baronet of Runnigore. It's like 8 hours of the seaside.
My poor old friend, would there were more like you.
Would there were indeed. But I bring you good tidings. Your foster brother Richard has returned from sea. His ship, the Tom Tit, rides yonder at anchor, and he himself is even now in this very village.
My beloved foster brother, no, it cannot be.
It is even so, and see, he comes this way.
For the bold man's ear, you see, we made for the bold man's ear. But she proved to be a frigate, and she up with her ports, and fires with a 32. It come and come and near, but we answered with a cheer, which paralyzed the folly boo, you see, which paralyzed the folly boo.
Which paralyzed the folly boo, you see, which paralyzed the folly boo.
Bernard kept me up, and he says he, this chap we need not fear. We can take her if we like, she's certain for the strike, for she's only a darn man's ear, you see, she's only a darn man's ear. But to fight a French fal-lal, it's like hitting of a gal, it's a lovely thing for to do. For we, with all our faults, while we're sturdy British folk, why she's only a poor polydoo, you see, why she's only a poor polydoo.
Why she's only a poor polydoo, you see, why she's only a poor polydoo.
So we up with our helm and we scud before the breeze as we gives a compassionating cheer. Froggy answers with a shout as he sees us go about, which was grateful of the poor man's ear, you see, which was grateful of the poor man's ear. And I'll wager in their joy they kiss each other's cheek, which is what them foreigners do. And they bless their lucky stars, we were hardy British stars who had pity on a poor Polly Boo, you see. Who had pity on a poor Polly Boo?
Who had pity on a poor Polly Boo? You see? Who had pity on a poor Polly Boo?
Come on, my Richard. Oh, on, boy.
Oh, my God.
my beloved foster brother and very dearest friend. Welcome home again after 10 long years at sea. It is such deeds as you have just described that cause our flag to be loved and dreaded throughout the civilized world.
Why, Lord love ye, Rob, that's but a trifle to what we have done in the way of sparing life. I believe I may say without exaggeration that the merciful little Tom Tate has spared more French frigates than any craft afloat. But 'tain't for a British seaman to brag, so I'll just stow me joint tackle and belay. But vast heaving, messmate, what's brought you all a cockbill?
Alas, Dick, I love Rose Maybud, and love in vain.
You love in vain? Oh, come, that's too good. Why, you're a fine, strapping, muscular young fella, tall and strong as a t'gallon mast, taut as a forestay. Aye, and a baronite to boot, if all had their rights.
Hush, Richard, not a word about my true rank, which none here suspect. Yes, I know well enough that few men are better calculated to win a woman's heart than I. I'm a fine fellow, Dick, and worthy any woman's love. Happy the girl that gets me, say I. But I'm timid, Dick. Shy, nervous, modest, retiring, diffident. And I cannot tell her, Dick, I cannot tell her. Ah, you've no idea what a poor opinion I have of myself, and how little I deserve it.
Robin, do you call to mind how years ago we swore that come what might we would always act upon our heart's dictates?
Aye, Dick, and I've always kept that oath. In doubt, difficulty, and danger, I've always asked my heart what I should do, and it has never failed me.
Right. Let your heart be your compass with a clear conscience for your binnacle light, and you'll sail 10 knots on a bowline clear of shoals, rocks, and quicksands. Well, now, what does my heart say in this here difficult situation? Why, it says, Dick, it says. It calls me Dick, because it's known me from a babby. Dick, it says, you ain't shy, you ain't modest. Speak you up for him as is.
For me?
Robin, me lad, just you lay me alongside, and when she's becalmed under me lee, I'll spin her a yarn that'll serve to fish you two together for life.
Will you do this thing for me? Can you, do you think? Yes, there's no false modesty about you. Your what I would call a bumptious self-assertiveness.
Huh?
I mean the expression in its complimentary sense. Oh. Has already made you a boatswain's mate. And it will make an admiral of you in time if you work it properly, you dear, incompetent old impostor. My dear fellow, I give my right arm for 1/10 of your modest assurance.
My boy, you may take it from me that of all the afflictions accursed with which a man's saddled and hampered and addled and dippered, and nature's the worst. Though clever as clever can be, a Crichton of early romance, you must stir it and stump it and blow your own trumpet, or trust me, you haven't a chance. If you wish in the world to advance, your merit you're bound to enhance, you must stir it and stump it and blow your own trumpet, or trust me, you haven't a chance. Now take, for example, my case. I've a bright intellectual brain. In all London City there's no one so witty, I've thought so again and again. I've a highly intelligent pace. My features cannot be denied. But whatever I try, sir, I fail in and why, sir? I'm modesty personified. If you wish in the world to advance, your merit you're bound to enhance, you must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet, or trust me, you haven't a chance. As a poet, I'm tender and quaint. I've passion and fervor and grace. From Ovid and Horace to Swinburne and Morris, they all of them take a back place. Then I sing and I play and I paint, though none are accomplished as I. To say so at reason, you ask me the reason. I'm diffident, modest, and shy. If you wish in the world to advance, your merit you're bound to enhance. You must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet, or trust me, you haven't a chance. If you wish in the world to advance, your merit you're bound to enhance. You must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet, or trust me, you haven't a chance.
Ah, it's a thousand pities he's such a poor opinion of himself, for a finer fella don't walk. Well, I'll do my best for him. Plead for him as though it was for your own father. That's what my heart's remarking to me just now. Oh, but here she comes. Steady. Steady it is. By the port admiral, but she's a tight little craft. Come, she's not for you. And yet, he's fit to marry Lord Nelson. By the flag of old England, I can't look at her unmoved.
Sir, you are agitated.
Aye, my lass, well said. I am agitated, true enough. Took flat aback, my girl. But 'tis not. 'Twill pass. This here heart of mine's a dictating to me like anything. Question is, have I a right to disregard its promptings?
Can I do aught to relieve thine anguish? For it seemeth to me that thou art in sore trouble. This apple?
No, my lass, 'tain't that. I'm took flat aback. Par, buckle me if you ain't the loveliest gal I ever set eyes on. There, I can't say fairer than that, can I?
No. The question is it meet that an utter stranger should thus express himself? Now, what says my book of etiquette? Yes, always speak the truth.
I'd no thoughts of saying this here to you on my own account, for truth to tell, I was chartered by another. But when I see you, me heart it up, and it says it, this is the very last for you, Dick. Speak up to her, Dick, it says. It calls me Dick, because we was at school together. Tell her all, Dick, it says. Never sail under false colours. It's mean. That's what me heart tells me to say, and in my rough, common sailor fashion, I've said it. And I'm a-waiting for your reply. I'm a-trembling, miss. Looky here. That's nervousness.
Now, how should a maiden deal with such an one? Keep no one in unnecessary suspense. Behold, I will not keep you in unnecessary suspense. In accepting an offer of marriage, do so with apparent hesitation. I take you, but with a certain show of reluctance. Avoid any appearance of eagerness, though you will bear in mind that I am far from anxious to do so. A little show of emotion will not be misplaced. Pardon this tear.
Rose, you've made me the happiest blue jacket in England. I wouldn't change places with the Admiral of the Fleet, no matter who he's a-hugging off at this present moment. But, axing your pardon, miss, might I be permitted to salute the flag I'm a-going to sail under?
An engaged young lady should not permit too many familiarities. Once.
My love, embrace my tender lover, oh my love, from tempest welter, from war's alarm, oh give me shelter within those arms, oh give me shelter within those arms, my soul.
Oh.
Well, what news? Have you spoken to her?
Aye, my lad, I have, so to speak, spoke her.
And she refuses?
Why, no, I can't truly say she do.
Then she accepts, my darling.
Hail the bridegroom, hail the bride, let the nuptial knot be tied.
What should a maiden do when she is embraced by the wrong gentleman?
Belay, my lad, belay. You don't understand.
Oh, sir, belay. I beseech you.
You see, it's like this. She accepts, but it's me.
You.
Hail the bridegroom, hail the bride, let the nuptial.
Hold your tongues, will you? Now then, what does this mean?
My poor lad, my heart grieves for thee, but it's like this. The moment I see her, and just as I was a-going to mention your name, my heart, it up and it says it, Dick, you fell in love with her yourself, it says. Be honest and sailor-like, don't skulk under false colors, speak up, it says. Take her, your dog, and with her, my blessing.
Hey, will you be quiet? Go away! Vulgar girls.
What could I do? I'm bound to obey my heart's dictates.
Of course, no doubt. It's quite right. I don't mind. That is, not particularly, only it's... It is disappointing, you know.
Oh, but, sir, I knew not that thou didst seek me in wedlock, or in very truth I should not have hearkened unto this man. For behold, he is but a lowly mariner and very poor withal, whereas thou art a tiller of the land, and thou hast fat oxen, and many sheep and swine, a considerable dairy farm, and much corn and oil.
That's true, my lass, but it's done now, ain't it, Rob?
Still, it may be that I should not be happy in thy love. I am passing young and little able to judge. Moreover, as to thy character, I know naught.
Nay, Rose, I'll answer for that. Dick has won thy love fairly. Broken-hearted as I am, I'll stand up for Dick through thick and thin.
Thank ye, messmate. That's well said. That's spoken honest. Thank ye, Rob.
Yet methinks I have heard that sailors are but worldly men, and little prone to lead serious and thoughtful lives.
And what then? Admit that Dick is not a steady character, and that when he's excited he uses language that would make your hair curl. Grant that he does. It's the truth, and I'm not going to deny it. But look at his good qualities. He's as nimble as a pony, and his hornpipe is the talk of the fleet. There, and that's only a bit of it.
Thank you, Rob. That's well spoken. Thank you, Rob.
But it may be that he drinketh strong waters which do bemuse a man, and make him even as the wild beasts of the desert.
Well, suppose he does, and I don't say he don't, for rum's his bane, and ever has been. He does drink, I won't deny it. But what of that? Look at his arms. Tattooed to the shoulder. No, I won't hear a word against Dick.
But they say that mariners are but rarely true to those whom they profess to love.
Granted. I don't say that Dick isn't as bad as any of them. You are, you know you are, you dog, a devil of a fellow, a regular out-and-out Lothario. But what then? You can't have everything, and a better hand at turning in a dead eye don't walk a deck. And what an accomplishment that is in a family man. No, not a word against Dick. I'll stick up for him through thick and thin.
Thank ye, Rob. Thank ye. You're a true friend. I've acted according to my heart's dictates, and such orders as them no man should disobey.
In sailing all lights ocean wide, your heart should be your only guide. In summer sea and favoring wine, your sacred fortune in mind.
My heart says to this maiden strike, she's tempted you, she's just the sort of girl you like. You know you do, if all of men her heart should gain, I shall resign. That's what it says to me quite plain, this heart of mine, this heart of mine.
My heart says you've a prosperous lot, with acres wide, you mean to settle all you've got upon your bride. It don't pretend to shake my axe by word or sign. It merely states these simple facts. This heart of mine, this heart of mine.
10 minutes since my heart said white, it now says black. It then said left, it now says right. Heart of a tag, I was so vainly restrained. You tell me so, but should it change its mind again? I let you know.
In saving all life's ocean wide, no doubt your heart should be your guide. But it is awkward when you find the heart of a tag does not know it's mine. The heart of a tag is mine.
Rose and Robin leave, arm in arm, while Richard is left to wander off alone, feeling very sorry for himself. But now comes the strange figure of a young girl clad in picturesque tatters. Her feet are bare, and her long hair falls wildly about her shoulders. Her name is Margaret. Mad Margaret, the villagers call her.
In a nest of weeds and nettles lay a
aught to soften thy sorrow? This apple?
No. Tell me, are you mad?
I? No. That is, I think not.
That's well. Then you don't love Sir Despard Murgatroyd. All mad girls love him. I love him. And poor Mad Margaret. Crazy Meg. Poor Peg.
Thou lovest the bad baronet of Ruddigal?
Oh, horrible, too horrible.
You pity me? Then be my mother. The squirrel had a mother, but she drank and the squirrel fled. Hush! They sing a brave song in our parts. It runs somewhat thus. The cat and the dog and the little puppy sat down in a... I forget what they sat down in, but so the song goes. Listen. I've come to pinch her.
Mercy, whom?
You mean who?
Nay, it is the accusative after the verb.
True. I have come to pinch Rose Maybud.
Rose Maybud?
Aye. I love him. He loved me once, but that's all gone. He gave me an Italian glance and made me his. He will give her an Italian glance and make her his. But it shall not be, for I'll stamp on her, stamp on her, stamp on her. Did you ever kill anybody? No? Why not? Listen. I killed a fly this morning. It buzzed and I wouldn't have it, so it died. Pop! So shall she.
But behold, I am Rose Maybud, and I would fain not die. Pop!
You are Rose Maybud?
Yes, sweet Rose Maybud.
Strange, they told me she was beautiful. And he loves you. No, no, if I thought that, I would treat you as the auctioneer and land agent treated the ladybird. I would rend you asunder.
I may be pacified. For behold, I'm pledged to another. And lo, we are to be wedded this very day.
Swear me that. Come to a commissioner and let me have it on affidavit. I once made an affidavit, but it died.
It died. It died.
But see, they come, said Despard and his evil crew. Hide, hide. They are all mad. Quite mad.
What makes you think that?
Hush. They sing choruses in public. That's mad enough, I think. Go, hide away, or they will seize you. Hush. Quite softly. Quite softly.
With flattery, sings it high, and it brings it away from the city. We play, we play, from childhood to girls, we play, it's over.
I feel chilly mad, because I am thoroughly bad. You'll see that once in my face. Oh, why am I husky and hoarse? It's the workings of conscience, of course. And huskiness stands for remorse. At least it does so in my case. When in crime one is fully employed, your expression gets warped and destroyed. It's a penalty none can avoid. I once was a nice-looking youth, but like stone from a strong catapult, I rushed at my terrible cult. Observe the unpleasant result.
Nice!
Indeed, I am telling the truth. Oh, innocent, happy, though poor. If I had been virtuous, I'm sure.
Like me.
I should be as nice-looking as you're.
Maybe.
You are very nice-looking indeed. Oh, innocence, listen in time. A vile existence of crime. Oh, you'll be as ugly as I'm. And now, if you please, we'll proceed.
Children, how they loathe me. Me whose hands are certainly steeped in infamy, but whose heart is as the heart of a little child. But what is a poor baronet to do when a whole picture gallery of ancestors step down from their frames and threaten him with an excruciating death if he hesitate to commit his daily crime? But, ha-ha, I am even with them. I get my crime over the first thing in the morning, and then, ha-ha, for the rest of the day I do good, I do good, I do good. 2 days since, I stole a child and built an orphan asylum. Yesterday, I robbed a bank and endowed a bishopric. Today I carry off Rose Maybud and atone with a cathedral. This is what it is to be the sport and toy of a picture gallery. But I will be bitterly revenged upon them. I will give them all to the nation, and nobody shall ever look upon their faces again.
Ask your honor's pardon, but...
Ah, observed. And by a mariner. What would you with me, fellow?
Your honor, I'm a poor man-of-war's man, becalmed in the doldrums.
I don't know them.
And I make bold to ask your honor's advice. Does your honor know what it is to have a heart?
My honor knows what it is to have a complete apparatus for conducting the circulation of the blood through the veins and arteries of the human body.
Aye, but has your honor a heart that ups and looks you in the face and gives you quarter-deck orders that it's life and death to disobey?
I have not a heart of that description, but I have a picture gallery that presumes to take that liberty.
Well, your honor, it's like this. Your honor had an elder brother.
It had.
Who should have inherited your title, and with it, its curse.
Aye, but he died. Oh, Riven!
He didn't.
He did not?
He didn't. On the contrary, he lives in this here very village under the name of...
You understand?
I think I do. With bigger than a second, the steps will be taken. It needs to plan.
I think so too. I readily bet it. You'll never regret it.
For duty must be done. This rule applies to everyone. And people over duty means the shirt,
bridegroom come.
Likewise the bride, the maidens are very elated and merry, they are her chums.
To dash the bride were almost a pity, the pity committee.
But duty, duty must be done.
The rule applies to everyone, and faithful though that duty be. Present the task of fiddly-dee, present the task of fiddly-dee, present the task, present the task of
fiddly-dee.
Face I shone. Farewell, go in peace.
I'm a virtuous person now.
That's why I went to.
And I to Margaret must keep my vow.
Better their lot, it must be, then that of the person I'm making, this person whose head is a cousin alluding to me.